This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
For joyful.
Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge here on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 until 9. And tonight I am joined by the woman who basically they named the radio after her because she was so amazing, Joy Etwell. Hello, Joy. Welcome back.
Hi, Tal. It's very good to be here.
So we'll be doing a few things tonight. We'll be covering our holy day of the weeks. And then later on, I have the exciting guest. It's actually Joy herself that we'll be interviewing.
Yes, I'm quite excited about this.
Yeah, well, it's actually good to interview because it's one of those funny things. You can be on the show for, what, 3 years you were the host?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And then you've actually, there's actually what you do as a job is very interesting and relevant to this show, and we just have never spoken about it. So
that's true. Because you're so busy interviewing other people, you don't actually think about
about
interviewing yourself. Because it's not really exciting if you interview yourself, but you can do it.
And also, it'd be a bit weird for you to pitch to be like, hey, so I was thinking for this one, maybe we'd just talk. Imagine I came on and was like, all right, so this show, we're just going to talk about me for an hour. I'm just going to tell you all about me. It doesn't quite work.
No, it doesn't.
Before we get stuck into talking to Joy too much, she's going to join me talking about the holy day of the week. And we actually have quite a few, right? Because we're leading up to Easter.
We have three of them, actually.
So why don't you tell me about some of these ones to do with Easter?
Well, this Sunday is actually called Palm Sunday, and it's a Christian feast that falls on the Sunday before Easter. So it's a movable feast. And it commemorates Jesus' triumphal entry into Jerusalem, where he supposedly got on a donkey and rode into Jerusalem, and all the crowds come out and yelled and shouted and cheered, and they threw palms down. And a week later, they crucified him, but we won't go quite there yet.
Right. So, don't ruin the end. I haven't finished the book yet.
But apparently, the palms symbolize goodness and victory.
Right. Okay, interesting. And what do people do on Palm Sunday?
Well, they have palms. Some people have palms in their churches. But what, I don't know what they've done in the past, but this, here in Melbourne, last year, I went on this, and again this year, they're actually going to have a walk for justice for refugees. So they've turned it into sort of a call for social action.
That's right, I remember that, actually.
Yeah, and last year they had about 8,000 people turned up in Melbourne. I think it's on in other cities as well. They met outside the State Library, which they're meeting outside the State Library at 1:30 with music, and then they're going to speeches.
Right. What's the connection between social justice and Palm Sunday?
Well, I guess they've just decided that this is a good day to have it. I mean, Jesus was on about social justice, wasn't he?
Okay. I was just wondering if there was anything in particular or about just a general that they want to, you know, this is a time if we're, often holidays do sometimes get transformed to something slightly more tangible for a contemporary
community.
Yeah, I'm
not sure if that will continue. Whether they'll find a cause each year to march for, I'm not sure. It'll be interesting.
It's an interesting one to consider.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
And then they walk down to Queen Victoria Gardens opposite the National Gallery in St Kilda Road.
Okay.
So you have to have all the police stopping all the cars and all the people in cars getting annoyed.
Right.
Because there's all these people walking down the street.
Now, that's not even the only holiday leading up to Easter, right?
No, but the following Thursday, so next Thursday, while you're here.
Next time I'm on?
Yep, I'll be in church.
Right.
Yep. It's called Mundi Thursday.
Mundi Thursday.
Yeah. Or it's called, it's referred to as Holy Thursday or Great Thursday. And this commemorates where Jesus met in the upper room with the disciples and had what they call the Last Supper.
I've heard of that.
Yeah. And as they say, he shared the Passover meal with his disciples.
Yeah.
And what happens is that he actually washed the feet of the disciples. Because wasn't it tradition that if people come in from walking on the roads, they've got dusty feet, it's quite traditional for the host to actually wash, or get the servants, I guess, to wash people's feet?
Yeah, people's hands and feet washed. But the feet, of course, was particularly, you know, you're really going out of your way there.
Yeah, and feet. Some, well, I know the church I'm going to, they're having a foot washing thing, and I said, I don't have to do that, do I? I mean, I actually find it, I don't know what it is, but I actually think, ooh, I don't know if I'd like that.
I think there's other people going, yay, I don't go on Christmas, I don't go on Easter, but I do come for Mundi.
Yeah. I've been to a service where they washed your hands.
Yeah.
And that was all right, but I'm not sure. But I was told I don't have to do it.
Oh, come on. Come on, you have to have your feet washed.
No, they might select people who are willing to do it. I don't know. I can't imagine they're going to wash everyone in the church's feet.
Right. And is that always the Thursday before Good Friday?
Yeah.
Being after the Sunday?
Yeah, the day before Good Friday.
So it's always that Thursday.
Yeah. And they talk about the fact that Jesus demonstrated how we should live by providing humble service to people. I'm sure it's that and many other things. So that's, and of course then there's the Good Friday and then there's Easter.
Oh,
Sunday.
Don't ruin it. That's next week. All right? We don't talk, I can talk about, I'm not going to sit here talk about Christmas now. It's not this week. It's another time. Easter isn't here yet.
Oh,
just Mundi.
Yeah.
Just Mundi and Palm Sunday.
Well, Easter Sunday you get to have Easter eggs.
Yeah, you can also eat them afterwards as
Did
well.
Did you know a lot of people don't eat meat on Good Friday?
Really?
Yeah.
Is it a...
It's a very Catholic thing, but I've got friends...
I thought that was just on Fridays in general.
Oh, that used to be, but it's not anymore. But I've got friends who are not Catholics who will not eat meat on Good Friday.
You know what? Interesting. Is that like that it's distasteful to, like, kill something on
that
day?
Yeah. And if you go anywhere where there's fish and chip shop open on Good Friday.
Yeah, because the fish
is
still...
The queues are amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did know that. I knew-ish about it, you know, like... And I certainly know that the fish and chip shops are like, that's their day. That's
yeah,
their
exactly.
day. It's like the chocolate shops get the Easter fish and chips.
Hot cross buns on Friday.
Yeah.
Easter eggs on Sunday. Yeah.
Right. Well, we do actually have another holiday, which... Is not a Christian one. It has nothing to do with Easter at all.
No, that's good.
Though it does. This one is actually Rama Navami. It has a few different, slightly different names. It's on the 28th of March. It's a Hindu festival. So 28th of March this Saturday this year it is, and it's Rama's birthday.
Who's Rama?
So Rama is an avatar of Vishnu and is the oldest known god to appear in human form. So that it's his birthday when he sort of became into being or descended. When we talk about an avatar, it's sort of like the form that we actually see the like ultimate beings or ultimate being. But Rama is a particularly revered avatar. And in some sects, he's even considered the actual representation of the supreme being. He's not just a sub representation or something like that, that he is the supreme being. So it's quite
like
an important...
In Christianity, we talk about Jesus coming as the Son of God or to represent God. We're talking about the same sort of thing.
I think,
some
extent. And it is worth noting, you'll find a lot of Hindus really resent when, you know, people, they're referred to a bit as polytheists because they sometimes look a bit back and go, you know, I know that sometimes, you know, they might say, well, I think it's a bit arbitrary that we've decided that the Trinity in Christianity is monotheism, but the representational beings of the supreme being in Hinduism, oh, that's completely different.
I'd like you to get someone on who can actually explain the Trinity in a way that anyone can understand, by the way.
Yeah,
maybe that should be for another program.
That's a whole adventure in some. So, yeah, so it's... Rama's birthday, you might hear referred to as Sri Rama or a few other little things, but Sri is like just saying like the Rama or like Mr. Rama. It's so you sometimes hear different things, and if you're not familiar, you'll sound a bit silly. So he's not just he's also often depicted holding a bow. So if you ever want to, ever see sort of often, you know, usually blue, usually much like Krishna, that sort of blue imagery with a bow, probably Rama, because
Is he Cupid?
No. His story, some of his stories involve him with his excellent shot with a bow, but obviously not when he was born as a little baby. But so the festivities can go up to 9 days.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right. That's a real party. This is none of this just a Sunday. So it can really go up for a really long time. And I mean, as always, and especially in such a big continent like India with Hindus, in the south, it's different to the north. They do different things. But one of the things people have is a drink called panakam. It's a sweet drink prepared on this day with jaggery and pepper. So it's with pepper, but it's also jaggery. Now, I looked at what jaggery is. You've ever heard of that?
No.
So it's like a mush. It's a mush made from dates, palm oil, and like cane sugar.
Oh, wow.
So it's a really sweet, cakey thing, which you then use as, you know, the way people use like some sort of sweet mix to then put in cocktails, let's say, whatever it else it might be. So this is a thing that you use that then makes things very, very delicious and sweet. And so that's that. And pepper. I really want some. I want to try some of it. I really like dates, and I really like real cane sugar. It's not sugar. It's the cane.
I think you should get Nivi to make you some.
I know. I'll go ask her. I'd actually asked her. I was like, have you heard of that? And I think she went and looked it up, because I just sent her the name. I was trying to entrap her. A little, so I wonder how we did there. But we're going to move on to our song now. Those are our first. So we'll just say, for those who are going to Palm Sunday or to Mundi, you know, have a wonderful time. We congratulate you, you know, have wonderful festivities. And also for those celebrating Rama's birthday this Saturday, we wish wonderful festivities and good times upon you. Hello, you're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Someone's been writing in just noting that many Greeks celebrating Easter is actually will be in the following week. Very, very good. You're a little ahead of me. I was going to wait till we actually reached Easter, like I said, but I'm glad to hear that we've got people listening, contributing, making sure that we're on our toes.
There's lots of happening, because Passover's also
Passover will
happening.
Be, yes.
Yeah.
Well, Passover will be at the same time as Easter, and then after we'll have, according to Greek Orthodox, Easter after that. So the whole period becomes quite full. It's sort of here and around the end of the year, around Christmas time, is often you just end up having, it's that midwinter is another time where just many religions have a lot of holidays.
But Passover doesn't move dates, you were saying. It stays on the same date.
No, it stays Easter. Lunar calendar.
Yeah.
It's lunar calendar. So it does move, according to our calendar, it does move.
Right.
It does move around. But it's still, you know, we're still talking about a short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, it's still within this general time of the year. So it becomes quite full round here. Now, we're talking to Joy Etwell. Joy Etwell is the former host and one of the founders of the Spirit Lounge. I really liked working in that introduction. But we're actually talking to Joy today because she works for SES, the State Emergency Services. And why don't you actually tell us a little bit about what you specifically do?
Well, my role title is Clinical Officer Chaplain's Coordinator. It's a job that involves providing psychological and spiritual care for the volunteers. And we've got something like 5,000 volunteers. Thankfully, they don't need us all at the same time. there's myself, I'm a minister, and my colleague's a psychologist, and we also have volunteers who we train up to help us. So these are active members of state emergency services out there, and they're trained up in how to do interventions to help members, because, I mean, our volunteer members go out to some awful incidents sometimes. You know, they go out to road crash rescues, they go out to suicides, they go out to crime scenes. I joined SES when I was living in the country in Port Ferry, and we used to go out to accidents all the time and have to do some pretty awful jobs at times. So you need to be able to support the members.
Right, and how does that support take, how do we see that support actually happening?
Well, we go, just last night I went to a country town, and these members had been out to an incident, suicide, and it was pretty horrific. And I went and sat and went through a group, in what we call a group intervention, with them. So we get them just to talk about what they've seen, what they've done. We remind them about any reactions they may have, how they can look after themselves, and of course we remind them that we're there if they need to talk. And often just by getting people to actually talk about what they've seen and what they've done, it helps reduce the reactions they're likely to have to it. Because you will have reactions. I remember going to an incident, and it was a car versus a truck, and it was pretty messy. And I remember having reactions to that, and I thought I was going nuts, because that was before I had anything to do with peer support, and I kept on thinking, I kept on smelling the smell of blood, even though there was nothing there. I had it at the scene, but there was nothing there, and I'm thinking, I'm going nuts.
Wow.
And someone else in our unit asked for peer support to come in, and they came in and did this group intervention with us, and someone else mentioned the same thing, and I thought, oh, thank goodness for that, I'm not going nuts. I mean, it eased off after a few days, but, yeah, I thought I was losing it.
But it's so important then that you actually spoke, like, that people spoke about it, and then you get a bit reassured, because otherwise you're a bit on your own and you don't yeah. realise that it's normal.
And one of the things we do, though, is we go to every unit every 2 years. So we've got something like 150 units, and we have to go out and do a presentation. So we talk to them about things like what are critical incidents, you know, what sort of reactions may you have. We talk about peer support. We also have chaplains, so we talk about the role of chaplains at the units. So that's something that we do, well, the peers do, and that's really important, because it gets people to know about those services that are available to them.
So how do you then go about, so you actually do work like on a 2 year cycle with the different units. And what will you actually do in those presentations? Is it presentations, or are they like workshops, or is it just a time to sit down and make sure you're talking with them?
We do a presentation. We actually, one of the things I did when I first joined was we made some DVDs, and we made six different DVDs, and it's actually I took a guy called Paddy, who was in his final year of, I think he was becoming a producer or a director, and then another guy was learning how to be a cameraman, and we went on the road and we interviewed a whole lot of volunteers about things they'd seen. And so we made these DVDs, which are really good, because it actually gets a message across, and it's actual volunteers talking. So it's not just someone acting like they're an SES person, they're actually talking about it. And so we use those to get people talking about what they've done and what they've seen. We get people to sit in groups and have discussions, and we have PowerPoints. So it's a whole range of things we do with them, trying to keep them interested and get them to understand what it is that could happen. Hopefully it won't, but, you know.
Of course it can. I mean, you're working in state emergency services.
Yeah.
You're going to see things that happen in emergencies.
I mean, we very, very make sure we say you may have reactions or you may not, because we also don't want people that don't have reactions thinking they're not normal. So, but sometimes, you know, I remember talking to someone one night and they'd been to a search and they'd actually not even seen the body. The group they were searching with hadn't found the person, but they were reacting. They were angry. They were getting drunk. There was a whole lot of stuff happening for them. And when I actually questioned them about what was happening, it turned out that the child that had drowned was the same age as their child. And I said to them, you know, what you're having is normal reaction to an abnormal event. You know, it's okay for you to react like this. And you could almost hear them breathe a sigh of relief on the phone. Oh. And so we talked about ways they could look after themselves and things they could do rather than going and getting drunk, other things they could do to help them. So a lot of what we do is I do a lot of work, one-on-one work on phone. I go and see people. I do hospital visits, a whole range of things.
Hospital visits for people from SES? Or
yeah, for members who might be in hospital. You know, it's all these things that if someone's... We have someone at the moment who's down from another state who is have medical issues and who's in Melbourne. So we're looking after them because they've got no family here and they're going through a really rough time and they are with SES somewhere else. So that's part of what we do also.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 till 9. And we're talking to Joy Etwell, who works at SES, doing chaplaincy work. And I wanted to ask afterwards, coming back, what actually qualifies? How does someone qualify to be a chaplain?
Well, basically, they have to have a Bachelor of Theology, and they have to be an ordained minister within their own religion. So we've got a lot of chaplains from the Uniting Church, some from Anglican, Salvation Army. Yeah. So they have to have actually studied and
this is specifically SES? That's SES's requirements?
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Outside of that, is chaplain a specific... I actually never considered that. It's then... how does someone become a chaplain if not specifically, just in general? Is there not a specific rule for what you have to do to become a chaplain?
No, I think it's fairly open, but I think they're trying to change that so that there's actually some credibility to it.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think in some organisations you don't necessarily need to have really done much theological study, which is fine on one level, but on another level it's not, because, you know, you might end up in a discussion with someone about all that God stuff and you need to know a little bit about it.
So you working as a chaplain, do you talk about a lot of God stuff?
No, hardly ever. Mostly people don't want to engage in... I mean, having said that, there are occasions when we will not raise the subject. Okay, it's not up to us to say, go in there and start talking about God stuff. We're not allowed to do that. If people do that, they're out. What it is, if someone wants to talk about God stuff, then you can talk to them about it. So it's not something we do. However, you know, I'm happy to talk to someone about God stuff.
So what will you talk about instead?
Anything they want to talk about. I think chaplains often come onto their own when you've got people dealing with loss, you know, dealing with grief and loss. I think chaplains do a really good job then. I remember a couple whose son had been killed, and I rang them and said, did they want the chaplain to visit them? And they said, no, but would like you to visit. I said, do you realise that I am actually a minister? Oh, yes, but that's all right. And so I worked with that couple for 6 to 8 months, go up to the country, visit them, just sit with them, let them say whatever they want to. Unfortunately, the woman got cancer and died, was really, really sad. But I had the privilege of working with her right up until the end. But we never talked about God, never once.
And do you have others that instead jump to that quite a lot and maybe want to talk about religious issues that maybe bring up because of the things they've seen or what's happening to them?
No. I was quite surprised after the... because I worked in Marysville after the bushfires, that there was very few people that wanted to talk about... You know, you'd imagine people will say, you know, why has God done this to you, to us? But it wasn't something that people talked about. It was quite interesting.
Obviously, the whole concept of chaplains came about in the first place because people might have, you know, certain concerns, and maybe people's sort of religion might be an avenue for that. What do you think that does that reflect something larger that people in as a whole generally are not wanting to turn to religion or not interested in talking about religion when they are in these times of grief?
Yeah, I think as a whole, people are not as religious as they used to be. People are often happy to talk to a chaplain, but they just don't want to talk about religion.
Hmm.
I mean, in you know, back in the olden days, everyone belonged to the church and the community, but it's not like that anymore. And we also have the situation where now in SES, we're getting people from a lot of other faiths are becoming members. And sometimes that means that we need to be able to get religious leaders from other religions to help out. But there's times when they're happy to talk to a chaplain, even if they are Muslim or Hindu or something, they don't mind.
Mm. Well, that was actually going to be my next question, is that how often are you really engaging people who maybe not not want to talk about religion, but might be actively of a different religion or actively not religious, you might say, or what does this happen much?
Not a lot, but we've had two or three times. And what I've done is actually go into that situation because I am what they call the chaplain's coordinator, and I will talk to them about what is it we can do for them. And a lot of religions have very different traditions, especially around death. And how quickly they need to bury the person and the sort of things they need to do to honour that person. And for us, it's really important that we can actually work to make sure that happens for them. But often they will say, look, we're happy to talk to your chaplains. Mm. We don't want you to actually go and get someone from our own religion. Because, you know, a lot of people, they might say, look, I'm Muslim, but they actually don't attend.
Yeah, yeah.
And same with a lot of other religions. So they're happy to talk to a chaplain, knowing that our chaplains are not going to preach to them.
Mm. Do you have ever people who you have to turn away then as chaplains because you're concerned that they might preach to people or convert people and things like that?
Yeah, we do. And we have people that we have to turn away because they don't actually have they don't meet the criteria. We have quite strict criteria, and we've done that on purpose. Because, you know, just someone going out there and preaching is going to absolutely put people offside, and we don't want that to happen. We want people to feel okay about talking to chaplains. And one of the things that we try and get our chaplains to do is go and visit the units and get to know people, you know, on a one-to-one basis, or get to talk to them so they see that this person's, you know, just a normal human being. And then they might contact them. Of course, chaplains do weddings.
Yeah.
One thing. And there's some religions that they actually can't marry people outside of their religion, so that's a problem for us. I'm actually a marriage celebrant, which means I don't have to actually do weddings within a tradition of any of faith.
Mm.
So I probably get more weddings than some of the other chaplains because I don't have to follow a religious script in my wedding.
Why would you, I mean, you're not the only coordinator, you're a chaplain and you're a chaplain's coordinator. The other is a psychologist, right?
Yes.
Why is there a need for both?
Because part of our thing is that we look after psychological and spiritual care. So we cover both. We have a minister and a psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
And there's room for both, I think.
And I think I wanted to go on from that. Who do you talk to?
Well, women have supervisor. I don't at the moment. I'm at the moment in the midst of trying to get a supervisor. And it's someone you... It's not that you go and talk to them about the people you're seeing or what you're doing. You actually go and talk to them about how does it affect me? How does it affect my faith when I see the things I do and I do the things I do? You know, I remember during the bushfires... obviously, for me, prayer is important. I drive a lot and I pray when I'm driving and I sing. So luckily, there's no one else in the car.
Oh, God.
but one of the things that is really, important is to pray for when I go to do something. But during the bushfires, I got to the point where I couldn't pray. What I was seeing was so overwhelming and so horrific. I didn't know what to do with it. And to know that there are other people out there praying for me was really important. I think I've lost my train of thought here.
No, I mean, it's a hard one to it's a hard thing to talk about, you know, I can understand that. It's important to have someone out there specifically, and it can be it's a bit of a weird limbo. You don't actually have a supervisor right now.
Well, I'm meeting with someone after Easter to organise that. But what I found, especially after the bushfires, what was important for me, I mean, SES offered me counselling if I wanted to. They would pay for me to go and see counselling. But what was important for me was actually to have a ritual that, with a minister rather than counselling. So it's just about finding what works for you. And sometimes for me it's just going and sitting by the ocean. You know, it's not necessarily always having to talk to someone.
Maybe you could round off this little section telling us a little bit about what are some of the ways that people who maybe are in need, and obviously if people need to seek out help, they really should, but even small, tips and suggestions that you might have for what people might do when they're dealing with grief?
I think one of the most important things is find someone you can talk to, whether it's a friend, whether it's somewhere like Lifeline or anything that you find works for you, because when someone's going through grief, they need to be able to talk to someone about what they're going through, and they need to tell their story as many times as it takes. I mean, sometimes we get, I remember after the bushfires, some people needed to tell their story over and over again. They needed someone that was just willing to listen to their story as many times as they need to. And I think that's the same with grief. We sort of stipulate, oh, it's going to take this long. You're going to go through these stages. That's not how it works. You know, I want people, if they're going through grief, it's your journey and it will take as long as it takes and it will take the path that you need it to take. That's, I guess, my hints. But I think most importantly is having someone you can talk to.
We have someone who's just written in, I believe it's the same person. Yeah, this is Mike. Mike's been writing in. Hi, Mike. He says, I love how you provide just that bit of support bringing spirituality and sexuality together on your show, and thank you. And I thought that maybe it's worth... Thank you. Thank you for that, Mike. But maybe that's worth noting for a moment. Do you ever talk much about sexuality-type stuff when it's... Maybe not specifically at SES, but does that sort of thing come up with ministers?
I mean, we've had open conversations with ministers. It's very important that ministers that we have are open to dealing with people from any sexuality. I've got to say that SES has been absolutely fabulous. They have never, ever, from the moment I stepped in there, I've always been out about who I am, and they never hesitated to appoint me to the role they've appointed me. I think some of the chaplains took a while to get used to the fact that there was this, number one, a woman.
Right.
And number two, a lesbian.
I didn't even think of the woman part, let alone the fact that you're lesbian.
I know.
Oh, no.
But, they have supported me, and to the point where they decided they wanted to go on Pride March last year for the first time.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And they came to see me and said, we want to go on Pride March. So, look, I'm you know, sometimes emergency service can be a boys' club and it can be all sorts of things, but I've got to say that they have been so supportive. And they're always trying to be supportive of people of different sexualities that come and join SES. And they'll come and say to me, how do you think we can support this person? So that's, you know, I find that really positive.
Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to The Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 every Thursday from 8 to 9, and I'm speaking to Joy Etwell about
SES. Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
How do you know they're faithful listeners? Do they tell you?
No, it's just a pun. What do you want from me? Oh, you've been waiting, you've been waiting. Now, what I did want to ask about, so obviously, maybe we should talk about it. Just talking about the radio for a moment. Of course, you were the host here. So, I wanted... It's interesting to think. In SES, it could have been potentially controversial for you to be in that sort of position that you were, being a woman, but also a lesbian, right?
Heaven help us.
Interestingly, it would probably be, if anything, as someone like Joy, it could be the opposite, that actually it can be controversial for you to want to found a religious station, a religious show, you know, that suddenly you being a chaplain is the controversial part when you're at Joy rather than the...
It was, especially when we first put in the proposal. I did the Taste of Radio course and put in a proposal for a program, encouraged by the then general manager, because I'd been interviewed on Joy a couple of times. And Dean was one of the people also who was pushing for me to, Dean Beck, to come on and do a show. And so it was a bit controversial because some people thought I was going to come on and start trying to convert everyone to Christianity.
Yeah.
And that wasn't what we wanted to do. In fact, you know, Andrew, who was the poof, he was a United Church boy. And then we had the Pom, who was actually an agnostic. So we were looking to cover all sorts of religions and none in our discussion. But still, there were people that thought, you know, it's a bit dicey. But once we'd actually been on one grid, they were really happy to have us back.
Yeah, I guess it could be a bit of a weird double. I mean, as much as we think of, I imagine it can be really tough because you have, of course, people who come from religious backgrounds, and if they're GLBTI, they can often feel a bit, they can feel burned often,
yeah,
from
course.
Those communities. At the same time, that leads to a double thing where if you were a religious GLBTI in the mainstream community, GLBTI community, you can suddenly, if you're religious, it's a bit, you're in a minority and you can end up being burned right
on. Yeah, you
back.
Have to. You actually have to come out again.
Yeah.
You come out, I'm a lesbian, and then you come out and say, oh, by the way, I'm a Christian.
By the way, yeah.
And people go, what on earth would you want to be a Christian for?
Why would you want to be that? Like, but they don't accept you, that this and that.
But I think once people get to know you and get to know that you're actually not going to preach at them, you're not going to push religion down their throat. You know, I don't believe that Christianity is the answer for everyone. I believe that lots of religions have a lot to offer for people. So I'm not going to say to someone who might be Muslim or Hindu, oh, you haven't followed the right way, you've got to come over to Christianity.
Right,
I think
yeah.
that's a load of crap, quite frankly. And I get annoyed when religious people do, you know, Christian people do that.
How did you end up coming and even doing the Taste of Radio course with Joy?
I did a, Dean Beck interviewed me one night at 11 o'clock at night, really nice. One of our elders, Reverend Elder Diane Fisher, was out in Australia, and we contacted Joy and said we'd like to get an interview, and they interviewed us at 11 o'clock at night. And then he invited me to come back on to be interviewed again, and he was the one then that was suggesting that I could do a show on Joy.
So actually it was your work with SES which got you onto Joy in the first place, or were you talking about...
No, I was talking about MCC.
Okay, this was to do with MCC,
yeah.
I see. So it's a funny thing, though, that happens, is that you end up getting into Joy in the first place because of the sort of role as a chaplain and a minister and stuff like that, and then you end up sort of doing a show which is then about religious issues.
Well, there was nothing else like it on Joy. There was no show on religion at all.
No, and we want to fill those gaps.
Yeah. And for some people, it's important. I understand for a lot of people, it's painful. They don't want to have a bar of it, and that's fine. But for some people, they want a way that they can connect with their spirituality.
Well, I think it's so important to note that I think this show does a bit of a double thing. I'm sure we have many listeners who, you know, want to be able to, you know, that I'm sure we have many listeners who are largely not what we would call joy listeners, but they would be called, you know, they would feel like they're from religious communities and it's important that this show exists in order to reach out to religious people. And then at the same time, to some extent, this is a show that then reaches out to people who might instead say, well, I'm a GLBTI person and I don't fit, you know, I need that sort of religious outlet because I otherwise don't get it.
Yeah,
it's we sort of, obviously it's the same person largely, but there's two elements to it. It's not as simple as just saying, oh, there's religious people and they don't, you know, they need to have that GLBTI voice. There's also, they need to have that religious voice. That's going on, I guess, as well.
Yeah. I mean, we even interviewed the people from the atheist church.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, and all sorts of people from different religions. You know, what fits one person doesn't fit another. And I think we need to offer, and I think we do offer on this Spirit Lounge, and you've continued that, lots of different options for people.
Well, I think we want to talk about as much as possible. You know, there's many, many religions out there. And, you know, even now, I mean, we could do for the last three shows, we could talk about Easter and Passover that's coming up. But there are so many holidays.
Yeah.
There are holidays of many different backgrounds. And it would be a real shame to miss out on so many just because we're going to focus on what I personally know about. I think it's important to get out there, learn a bit, and, you know, I learn a lot.
Yeah, and we can all take a lot of stuff out of different religions. You know, we can connect with things in other religions. Just doesn't have to be, you know, Christianity and that's it.
Yes, of course. Good evening, faithful listeners. You're listening to the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. And if you've just started listening, you're actually at the end of it. Yes.
It was lovely to have you, but we're going now.
Yes, we are. Well, I want to just quickly thank those that wrote in today. Thank you very much. And Joy, I want to thank you for coming on and, you know, I am talking a little bit about some of the stuff that you do, got a bit personal, thinking about, you know, some tough stuff.
Yeah, it's good though. I have a job that I love doing, so not many people, well, lots of people can't say that these days. I mean, I love going to work.
Goodbye from Tal.
And goodbye from Joy.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.